All right, welcome to Mortgage Space. I'm your host, Alan Medeiros. Today we have Marvin Bush. Marvin, how you been?
I'm doing very well.
Man, it's been a long time since we had you on the podcast.
Yep, been a couple of days.
So guess what? The real estate market has changed.
Yes, it has.
So, you know, it's funny. We have lunch pretty much every week.
Right.
We see each other. We talk about business. And the one thing that I can always tell you that I'm never surprised by, it's called change.
Yep.
Right. So before the podcast started, we talked a little bit about the economic conditions right now, not only in our local markets, but nationally. And one of the things you talked about was inflation. Let's just jump right into it. So what are your views on inflation? How do you think it's affecting real estate?
Well, obviously, it's not good, especially after, you know, the last 10, 15 years of having so little inflation, and then what's happened the last 18 months. And obviously, it's had a negative effect on just about everything sure. on there. But it also impacts the real estate market, and unfortunately, not in a positive way. So we shall see what happens over the next year, and if the federal government's able to get it under control. That would make a huge difference, not only in real estate, but in the economy in general.
So one of the big things that we've experienced internationally has been the lockdown.
Right.
And that has made some major, major financial, waves, if you will.
Right.
Because the shutdown of any country, for one reason or another, has a severe impact on basically output, spending habits, mm-hmm. and majority of the world's economies' way of curbing, the stopping of spending money was to supplement. This included entitlements that we saw through the CARES Act. And in the United States, we had this tremendous, how do I explain this? Just an overwhelming amount of stimulus spending.
Right.
To the tune of $130 billion a month being pumped into the mortgage-backed securities, which mm-hmm. is what yielded our low interest rates sub 3%. And it stayed around that range for almost 5 months. And then when it started to go up, it went up rapidly. In the last, 3 months, we've seen an increase of almost 3% across the board. And today being September 23rd, yesterday we had the Fed's, aftermath discussion, and mortgage-backed securities price just fell through the floor. And it's like a falling knife, and you don't want to catch a falling knife. You're going to get cut. And right now we see interest rates continue to climb. So how do you think that in and of itself affects buyers' attitudes towards purchasing?
Well, it's been an interesting 2.5 years, obviously. The market that we're coming out of has been artificially inflated mm-hmm. over the last couple of years. And part of it is, as you mentioned, the buying down or buying of mortgage-backed securities to keep the mortgage rates artificially low. And then with the pandemic, one of the things that people found out is that, I don't have to live in this big city. Mm. to have a job here. So there's been a lot of moving throughout the country that I don't think would have happened had we not had the pandemic. Although I still think we would have had a strong demand in the market, but not anywhere near the extent that we've had the last 2 years. So I think from that standpoint, this last couple of years has been an artificial market, real estate market. But there's also other driving forces behind that as well. So we are still, regardless of what's going on in the economy, with what's going on with mortgage rates and other things, we're still in the midst of the worst housing shortage in the history of this country.
Agreed.
So when you look at even the state of California, the estimates right now are that we need another 2.5 million homes by 2030 just to stay even. So every year, nationwide, and especially here in California, we're falling farther and farther behind with the number of units that we need just to satisfy the current population that we have. So there's, even though we do have higher mortgage rates, and yes, it's really uncomfortable for buyers and they're kind of freaking out a little bit, we're just getting back to normal market driven rates is where we're at. So when you look at the 20-year average on rates, we're pretty much right in where we need to be currently on there. We've just gotten so accustomed to these artificially low rates that we've had in the past several years. So I think that what's going to happen with most buyers, even though they're a little bit freaked out, they're going to have to adjust their expectations for what they're able to purchase in the current market. And then once people get used to where we're at with rates, it'll just become the new normal. And that's happened over time. I just look back at the first home that I bought, and it's been a couple of years ago. But the mortgage on that was 13.25%. So, you know, I look at it from a different perspective of somebody that when they first started looking, the rates were at 2.5%, you know, from this last year. So it's a little bit different perspective. And I think that for the immediate future, we're going to see a lull in purchasing of homes. And it's a little bit more difficult, obviously, for entry-level buyers. And the reality is they're the most important part of the market, because if you don't have entry-level buyers, you don't have move-up buyers. So they're what's going to be driving the market, but it will become the new norm. And then the other part of it is that currently rent rates are not going down and they're not leveling off. They're continuing to go up. So we are still at a point where it costs as much to rent a property as it does to buy one, if not more. And there's zero benefits to renting a property versus owning a home. And with the buyers, they're focusing on a 7% interest rate. But the reality is, if you're renting, your effective interest rate is 100%.
Agreed.
So, you know, it's just one of those things that we're going to have a few bumps in the market in the immediate future, but things are going to level out, and people are going to continue to buy homes, sellers are going to continue to sell homes, and things will level out, although it is not going to be at the pace that we've seen the last couple of years.
Sure. So I like to call this a recalibration right now.
Right, yeah, absolutely. So I would agree.
Yeah, so the new normal right now is getting used to where the market is. It's like waking up after having been asleep in a coma for a while and saying, right. Wow, feels like 2010.
Right. You know?
So it's important to think about history as being a good indicator of where we might see things move towards. So this morning there was a market update from MBS Highway, and one of the things that was brought up is the 12-month moving average and inflation readings. Mm-hmm. So the CPI is the Fed's favorite measure of inflation, and there is a reading that will drop off on this 12-month conveyor belt, if you will. So every single month you get a reading, and if you have a lower reading on the tail end of this particular conveyor belt and that falls off, if the reading after that is much higher, it's going to re-average. And that's where we saw this big spike and mm-hmm. what the effective average inflation rating was. So they expect that reading to come out to be more levelized in October of this year, so next month, but that report won't come out until November. Mm-hmm. So projections are that interest rates for mortgages potentially could get better in the month of November after that reading comes out, because it will show that somehow, magically, inflation dropped. But all it really was is the average had drops off that really low average item in the beginning, 12 months, and then it starts to level out instead of being spiked like it is now. So potentially there is light at the end of the tunnel. It may not be a train coming to hit us, but something around the bend that could be better. But here's the thing that I've really been fascinated about. Buying habits are driven by price, payment, correct, right? But rate is only a function of someone's ability. The beautiful thing about finance is that if the opportunity comes up where rates do drop, you potentially could have savings long-term by refinancing if it comes to that point.
Agreed.
So let me ask this question. I gave you a battery of questions I wanted you to kind of dive into, and I'll just go ahead and ask the first one. Right now, as a buyer, what are the three biggest mistakes you think that buyers are making right now in the market?
Well, I think that this market, like every other market prior, I think the single biggest mistake that buyers make is not having their expectations in line with their budget. That's probably the biggest mistake. And what they think they're going to be able to buy versus the reality of what is available in the current market, those, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, are some distance apart. And a big part of what we're doing is trying to get those expectations back in line with the budget that they have to work with on there.
So are they thinking they can buy more with less?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And where do you think they get their feedback from to make those types of decisions?
Well, I think the biggest part of that comes from family members, friends, relatives, telling them what they should be able to do, but that has no bearing on what's really going on in the market, unfortunately. And I think a big part of it is just educating most of them on what is really happening in the current market. Because, you know, again, even obviously your family members and friends, they're well-meaning. However, we don't know when they purchase their current property to give that advice, because as we all know, the market changes on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
On there. So if you look even, well, look what's happened to rates in the last 12 months.
Oh, yes.
Dramatic change in rates. They've more than doubled, almost tripled in the last 12 months. So that has a huge impact. And I don't think that most people realize how much that does impact a mortgage payment, is when you're doubling or almost tripling rates, that has a huge impact on your buying power on there. So I think that's, again, that's probably where they're unfortunately getting some of their advice. And, you know, there's other things even with some of the stuff that you read online. There's parts of mortgage payments or housing costs that are left out. And a big part of that, which you deal with all the time, that's great that you're getting this information on payments with principal and interest. But you, as you know, if you're not having a substantial down payment, they neglect to add that mortgage insurance on top of that. And then there's also other expenses with being a homeowner as well.
So I want to touch on that point real quickly, because the benefit of the internet is it has tons of information. The downside of the information, downside of the internet is had lots of bad information.
Correct.
So the reality of any of these sites that you're going to get payments from is they're trying to do one thing, mm-hmm. to get you to call whoever's advertising there.
Absolutely correct.
And once they get you as a captive audience, they're going to try to convert into a sale. And the reality is that there will be a bit of backstepping once you actually get your profile and your credit, your income, your assets aligned with whatever it is you're trying to accomplish financially. And then you're going to get the true number. So I've been a big proponent of this. Tell the truth first.
Absolutely correct.
Because if you don't, you're going to backstep and you lose something that's just so important. It's called trust.
Right.
Right. So, and unfortunately, there's enough people out there that have pride that says, listen, I was wrong, but I'd rather just walk away, mm-hmm. and kind of go someplace else than to face the fact that I was wrong and say, hey, but there's a lot of grace in the fact that it's okay. Listen, I just wanted to tell you the truth up front. Because if you fail to do that, then you yourself as a professional, if you call yourself a professional and you did this, but are backstepping, mm-hmm. and having to retrace your steps and correct why you didn't tell them the truth in the front end. And to me, that's more damaging for the trust factor for any mortgage professional out
right.
there. So what about the second thing? Do you have three items today?
Well, the second thing that I would say is when buyers are looking at homes, I think the one thing that they need to realize that there's no such thing as a perfect home. There's going to be issues with every home. And part of the reason is because they're man-made. Nothing is perfect. And over time, so if you look at a home, when a home is first built, it immediately starts deteriorating. And it's the job of the homeowner to negate or at least slow as much of that deterioration as possible on there. And I think that sometimes buyers, especially first-time buyers more so, they get a little bit discouraged when they're going through the investigation process of homes and stuff. And, you know, when they have home inspections completed and they see this list of things that are called on these home inspections, and they fail to realize that, you know, if you take a 20-year-old house, obviously it was not built at the same code that we have today. And everything that's not built to the current code is going to be called by a home inspector. Doesn't mean that there's a thing wrong with the house. It just means that it simply was not built to the code that we have today. And the other part of that is that there is nothing, and I mean nothing, on a house that cannot be fixed. That's the other part of it. And most of it is much easier to do than most people realize. And the benefit that we have today that we didn't have 10, 15, 20 years ago, is there literally is a YouTube video for everything. Yeah. You can watch a YouTube video and fix virtually anything in your home, with some exceptions. Sure. Now, obviously, when you get into some electrical and HVAC and stuff like that, that obviously is a very specialized trade. But for the most part, there's almost nothing in a home that you can't fix just watching a YouTube video, if you just take a little bit of time and have just a little bit of mechanical ability.
So you said something that kind of made me think really about condition of the residence, right?
Right.
So you said if it's a brand new home and everything is perfect when you start, let's just say, it's really up to the person to maintain that property.
Correct.
Right, in order for it to stay in that condition. Well, the truth of the matter is that people don't take care of stuff.
Right.
Or they don't have the skills to maintain. So what happens is you have an aged property that gets to a point where it's in the condition because of time, wear, lack of maintenance, or minimal maintenance, right? So then I think about this, and this is just a funny comparison because, you know, I'm kind of self-conscious about this right now myself, is this. When you go look at this house, is it functional? Yes. Does it have wear and tear? Yes. Could it be something that you could habitably live in comfortably and maybe make some changes over time and still be comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right? Are there structural damage issues? I don't know. But if that's uncovered, that's a bigger problem, right? But I think about my own body. It's like, listen, over the last 15 years, I've been wearing on this body. But listen, I think I'm still pretty good. I've got a lot of life in me left, right?
Right, right.
But I could start making changes.
Absolutely.
And get myself back into the condition that I wanted to be.
Right.
Right? But it's not like I'm not a good person. I'm not on death's bed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these houses are kind of like that. They just need a little bit of love. So that if you have the right attitude about it, especially if you're a first-time homebuyer, my goodness, it's a significant differential between somebody who's been a homeowner for 20 years and they have a certain level of maintenance that they're used to doing, and they go to a house and they have a certain level of expectations, but they also know what it's like to put it back in that condition because maybe they were that first-time homebuyer 15, 20 years ago, or this is their third home, right?
Right.
And they're saying, listen, I can handle that. You know, that's okay. Let's just move on. So that's great advice. I really like that. So issues with the property. The third one, do you have one?
Well, I think that one of the other parts with a buyer, and this is not as big an issue now as it has been the last couple of years, but one of the other things with buyers is they get discouraged. And here's the thing. Buying a home is not like going and buying a car. You're not going to go and pick up a home the same day and move into it. It just does not work that way.
Man, I wish cars took longer to buy.
Yeah.
I know, having, you know, your background and knowing that world a bit, for me as a lender, if they come in and they're like, hey, look, I bought a brand new car. And I'm like, you did what?
Right,
and they're like,
right.
It only took us 4 hours. We negotiated the $625 payment. I said, you did what?
Yep.
I mean, if you really had to go home and think about every single time, I would say they'd probably sell 50% less cars.
That is true on there, and I would agree with that. And I think that because of the instant world that we live in, that buyers get discouraged way too easily when they're not able to get a home.
Sure.
And I think that it would really benefit them if they focus on the big picture. That yes, this is going to take a little bit of work, but look at the long-term benefit that we're going to have.
That's the key.
And that's what people don't understand. And it gets back to the same thing again. Do you want to get discouraged and continue to rent? Because here's the reality of when it comes to homes and other things. You're going to pay a mortgage payment regardless. You just have to determine, are you going to pay your own or are you going to pay your landlord's? But you're going to pay one way or another. So just stay focused. Because it's going to take a little bit of work, but how many things that are really beneficial and worth it are easy to do? They all take some amount of work and stuff. And then the other part of it is just rely and partner with a good agent or rely on them that has the same goal in mind as you do. Because there are some great agents that are working for their clients and stuff. And obviously, for the most part, we want the best outcome for our clients on there. Because again, I am a firm believer that there is almost no situation where being a homeowner is not better than being a renter. It's in almost every situation, it's much better to be a homeowner than a renter. So,
you know, I talked about this on one of the short reels that I did for Instagram. The three top motivating factors for purchasing real estate: number one is household formation. So if you have one kid, there's a sense of urgency to buy a place, right? When you have that second kid, it's like, I need to own a home. Why is home ownership an important thing for a family? Tell me. I mean, what's important about having a home when you have kids?
Well, number one is because it still is your sanctuary from the world.
Yeah.
Number two is you can make it your home. You can customize it the way you want. You are darn sure not going to do that with a rental property on there. And then the other part of it is when you look at long-term benefits, when your kids get ready to go to college and other things, isn't it nice to be able to use some of that equity in that home to pay for that?
That's really far down the line.
And that is way far down the line.
But I was thinking one other thing.
What's that?
It's stability.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Stability of neighborhood, home life, schools, consistency. You know, one of the issues in the United States that we've felt for literally 70 years in our country is instability and mobility, where people are moving all the time.
Right.
Right. And it becomes particularly challenging for kids. I think they need to have a stable environment, if you can provide that, where they have consistency and continuity and trust in that environment. And households that do own homes have a better chance of maintaining that.
Absolutely.
Plus, you strengthen neighborhoods. You know, it's always a benefit to have families on a street where literally you're going to have a commonality of age brackets between 3 to 5 years. But these kids grow up together. They know each other. There's a sense of community, right? So that's one of the things. The second reason, you have a dog or a pet and you don't want to rent anymore because you have to pay this stinking deposit every time you try to rent someplace.
Right.
Right? Because if you have your own yard, you can let the dog do what they need to, right?
That is correct.
And you have an opportunity to do things that you didn't have, you know, if you had to rent. So that's just number two. And the third is investment, right? So people want to buy real estate because they see these people online that say, listen, you want to be wealthy, you need to buy real estate. They're like, great, I have no money. It's like, well, you can do this and you can do this, right? Well, truth of the matter is, really not that easy. But hey, there's a lot of things. Remember they had, what was it, the 1 minute ab? Right. But you know, if you feel that, you know, we're going to give you the 30 second ad, but if you get the results we want, we'll send you the extra 30 seconds for free, right? It's like everybody wants this instant gratification.
Correct.
But real estate is one of the true methods of long-term wealth. And those are the three reasons why people are motivated to buy real estate. So let's flip the script now. I've always known you as been a very, very strong listing agent, meaning you help sellers obtain you know, the benefits of home ownership through sale, right? So tell me, what are the three top mistakes that you see sellers making right now?
Well, the number one mistake that I think that sellers make is the expectation that they have for the value of their home. And I will tell you, it's interesting how people feel about houses versus homes. So the difference is that people will put a value on someone else's house that is substantially different. But I can tell you, I have only ever sold the nicest home in the neighborhood. I've never sold anything but that on there. So the sellers, I think the biggest mistake that they make is that they have a much higher opinion of the actual market value of their home than what the market will bear, or the reality of what we're seeing in the market. And there are...
So how does that hurt somebody?
Well, I think that how that hurts somebody is, number one, when they want to list those properties at a much higher rate and they, or much higher price than they set, they get discouraged, they get angry, and there's this whole trend of different emotions that you go through when you're selling your home. So when they're looking at the market, they're a little frustrated. Is why is my house not selling for what it should be selling? Well, it's because you have it listed for a price that is well above what it should be listed at on there. And one of the things that I try to do is just be straightforward. I don't just ask someone what they think they want to list their house at. I show them the market data. This is what the market is telling us where this should be at. And it's based on actual sold comparables. It's not just, well, let's just try it at this and see what happens. And we're actually seeing that in the market currently when people are saying, hey, I'm seeing prices come down. Well, no, you're not. What you're seeing are homes adjusting back to the current market that should have never been listed where they were at, because they were listed according to the market that we had 6, 8, 10, 12 months ago. And they're just being adjusted back to the market. So I think that's a big, big factor in a lot of disappointment with a lot of sellers in their homes.
Good. So number two?
Number two is one of the other biggest mistakes that sellers make is the little issues with their home that they think are not that big of a deal are a very big deal for buyers. Things that they've learned to live with over the years, those become very big issues with buyers. And it's just little things. So for an example, if you have a cabinet door that won't close all the way, if you see those little cracks in your walls, things like that, that's a big issue to a buyer, because in most cases, buyers are a little fearful anyway.
Sure.
I mean, that's just normal human nature to be a little bit fearful, especially when you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the stuff that you have gotten used to, that's all well and good that you were okay with it, but most buyers are not going to be okay with it. And getting that stuff taken care of prior to the home going on the market, and it's just things, minor things, and it could be up to even putting a coat of paint on a house.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the ratio that you look at with paint. A gallon of paint's about $40 in that can. But if you put it on that wall, it's literally worth about $4,000. So the difference between painting the inside of your home and spending, I don't know, $3,000, $5,000 to do that, it can literally gain you $20,000 to $30,000 in value on your home by doing that. Because again, there's nothing that is more calming to a buyer to walk into a home that has fresh paint, everything's nice and clean, sparkly clean, everything works. It really eases that anxiety that they have as they're going through this process. And they can actually see themselves living in that property.
Yeah, great advice, and definitely something that I would acknowledge. It's funny because I learned so much from you because we work together so often, but specifically you get to see property. I don't.
Right.
I see an appraisal, right? So I get the person that came out of the salon. They're beautiful. They look great for the red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see them when they just woke up and their hair's matted to the,
Right.
And you have to get it ready.
Absolutely.
So that when somebody does come, it looks polished and finished. And there are those that don't take your advice.
That is correct.
Wind up going through those price changes, and then they start asking the questions like, what is wrong? It's like, well, I told you this, but now you're learning, you know, through mm-hmm. this process of the, let's just call it the stupid tax, right?
Right.
It's like, I've been down this path so many times before, allow me to help you. Let's get you in the best possible position to make this work. So this mistake won't cost you $10,000, because I would argue that the average price reductions are between $5,000 and $15,000 right now.
That is correct.
So
yeah, they're not minor.
That's a significant adjustment.
Right.
Just think about it, right? So if I told you, you know, you have $50,000 in your bank account, but today we're just gonna drop $15,000 out of it, your brain's gonna go, what is going on? Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, it's a significant number. So I would agree with that. All right. Third.
So third is and this one is kind of the most difficult, but the one thing that the biggest mistake, or one of the other biggest mistakes that seller makes, is that they're unwilling to listen to the recommendations.
Goes along with what we just closed up with.
Of who they hired to help them sell their home.
Oh.
And the reason that we make those recommendations is always in their best interest. And again, you go through those processes. So my normal procedure when I am working with a client is I'll go do a walkthrough first. We'll sit down and we'll go over the information on the homes. And then I'm going to make recommendations on things that they need to do to their home. And part of that recommendation is to eliminate that anxiety while they're in the midst of a transaction. Because here's the difference. if you're willing to make those changes or repairs or corrections on your home up front, it is much more beneficial and less costly to you than when you're in the middle of a transaction and you're pressed for time and this stuff has to be done or the deal's going to fall apart. And then, especially in situations if we have a seller where they've already committed to another property, now not only do you have a deadline on the home you're selling, you have a hard deadline on the home that you're buying. And there's deposits involved with this that can be, in fact, they always are, thousands of dollars in deposits. So listening to the recommendations, once again, the recommendations are made for the best interest of the seller to get your home sold and down the road so you can move on to the next chapter in your life on there. Because they're, with buyers or sellers, there's only a certain amount of energy that they have to devote to this process.
And you need to do it. Because they're still working. They have lives. They have kids. They've got all the other things that happen. Now we're just throwing in, hey, I'm going to sell my house.
Right. And you need to do it as efficiently as possible to get this done so they can move on to their next chapter of their life.
So everybody loves a NASCAR pileup, right?
That is true.
There's always winners and losers in that, whether you be a fan or the person in the pit crew and the driver themselves, right? But why is it we're attracted to that stuff?
You know, that is the big question, right? So you think about this, just as human nature, we always like the blood and guts and the horror of everything. Why is it that when there's a wreck, everybody's got to stop and look at the wreck?
Call them rubbernecks, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So honestly, and everybody always focuses on the negative. So this is one of the biggest issues that we have here locally. And especially when it comes to real estate, people listen to the national news and they listen to all of these numbers and stuff when it comes to real estate. That's all well and good. That's a national view on things. But every single real estate market is unique.
Agreed.
Everything is local. Agreed. So what's happening in a market in the Midwest or the South or the East or even in Arizona or Los Angeles is totally different than the market that is happening right here that we're dealing with. So I know it's difficult to do that, but just turn the news off.
Sure.
Just stop listening to it and work with a competent agent here locally so they can let you know what's going on in the current market that we have here.
So more along the lines of those catastrophic events or things that maybe have gone wrong, let's go back to your list. So you were just talking about not taking the advice of using, you know, quality people to help you prep a house to get ready or using those recommendations. It may sound like, hey, I'm trying to help my buddy out over here to get this paint job, or this guy's going to do this, or this company's going to do this. But no, you've tried these people. You have social and physical proof of success, right? So success leaves clues,
right?
Right. So you can say, no, this is literally what I do in my hobby is I flip homes or I do this. I'm an active investor and this is the quality they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why we continue to use them. If they weren't doing it, you know, I always bring it back to myself. I'm a consumer.
Right.
Right. When I spend money, I want my dollars to go as far as they can. Right.
Right.
But you've also seen people that overpromise and severely underdeliver, and we have no traction with them and you keep chasing price, you're going to get burned eventually.
Absolutely.
So tell me a story we talked about 3 months ago. There was a family that said, I don't like the quote for the painter that you sent out to the house. I've got a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me that, because it was something that you told me at the end. It was like, what? They left out what? A room?
Right. So part of the issue is that whenever I go through a property, I'm very thorough with what I'm looking at. And whenever I make recommendations, once again, they're in the best interest of the client. Part of the issue was obviously with some clients, they don't like the quotes that come back, but I don't think that people realize the cost of materials and labor these days.
Sure,
so everything's gone up a little bit. I mean, look at the gas pump. That'll kind of tell you what's happened over the last couple of years. So there is nothing that is immune from what has happened with the increase of costs for everything. So we had an issue where I recommended that the house be painted and had one of my people that we use all the time go and do a bid. And that bid was not what the seller was looking for, and they did hire somebody else. Well, the issue is that they didn't include closets, they didn't include ceilings, they didn't include some of the trim. Well, yeah, if you're eliminating all that stuff, there's going to be a dramatic difference in the bid costs on there, because that stuff is actually what takes time. It doesn't take any time to roll some paint on a wall. It's the detail part that makes a big difference with that. And it's the details that matter, because those are what the buyers are looking at when they're looking at a property on there. So sometimes, in lot of cases, the lowest bid is not the best.
Yes.
You have to make sure that you're comparing apples with apples on there. And here's the other part. We, under no circumstances, ever get any kind of a kickback, any kind of gratuities or anything for anybody that we recommend. The reason we do that is because they do good work.
Yes.
And they're reasonably priced. But we don't take kickbacks, because we would lose our license. Yeah. It is against the law to do that.
Respect.
Even a gift card is against the law for us to take.
But there's one thing I keep coming back through in any professional service that's provided. It's consistency.
Correct. Right?
So I can't say that any particular person doing any trade, any profession is going to be perfect 100% of the time.
That is correct.
But they're humbled enough to say, hey, we made a mistake, or that's not the way we wanted the outcome to be. We're going to do our best to make it right.
Right. Right.
And even with your vendors, that you're creating value, you know, the $40 turning into $4,000, that's something that is not always seen, because there's a bit of blinders there on what their perceived value and actual value is. And that's a huge, huge differentiation between somebody who's a professional willing to tell you the truth, rip the Band-Aid off. It may cost a little bit more up front, but you're going to reap the rewards in the end. Then somebody that says, yeah, sure, let's do it that way. That sounds good. Let's do it that way, because you want it, right?
Right.
So I strongly believe that in any type of financial decision that you're making, you need to seek counsel, but not just anybody.
That is correct.
Because you're always going to find somebody that will tell you what you want to hear.
Right.
And it may not benefit you in the end, because they either don't do this as their livelihood, or they have had an experience that was contrary to what you have, because you have a totally different set of circumstances than they had.
Correct. And that is true. And I would agree with that. You know, when you look at the big picture, don't go to a dentist for advice on your heart surgery. It just doesn't. It just doesn't work out well when you do that. Go to the appropriate professional and get the proper advice and recommendations on that. It just makes your life so much easier when you do that. And the other part too, there are some things, even though I mentioned earlier that there's a YouTube video for some things, or for virtually everything.
Sure.
There are some things you just don't need to do. You need to leave that to the professionals that do that stuff. And I will tell you that painting, honestly, is one of those things that, just because you put paint on a wall doesn't mean it looks good. It needs to be put on there correctly. And I can walk into a house and immediately tell, wow, you guys did this painting yourself.
So we call those the DIYers, right?
Yes. And sometimes it's good to let someone else do that on there. It is money very well spent when you let the professionals do that.
Yeah. So I've seen some project homes.
Mm-hmm.
They have all the intention in the world to make it as beautiful as they think they can make it.
Right.
But they just don't have the skill set to really bring that to where it needs to be.
Right.
And listeners out there, just real, very just simple advice. You cannot compare most, if not majority, of resale homes to that new construction home that you walk through that had every single attention to detail made, including the furniture, the flooring color, the matched cabinets, spotless kitchen. It's not typically obtainable like that in every resale home. So you also have to realize that the base price is called base for a reason. If you add in all of those upgrades, it's typically going to be between 30 to 35 to 40% higher than what you see for face value. So I had another real estate agent told me this. He said, so Alan, did you ever notice that they don't have doors on the rooms as you go in? It actually makes it feel bigger because you don't have this another impediment. I'm like, oh my gosh, I never noticed that, right? I'm thinking to myself, I've been tricked this whole time, right? It's been sitting right in front of me. Well, yeah, they make it as inviting as possible.
Right.
All the windows are open. Light naturally is coming in. All the lights are on.
Right.
The average person doesn't keep every light in the house on. Actually, I got yelled at if I left a light on in a room and I left the room.
That is true.
Right? And what was the whole comment? It says, we don't own the power company, right?
Right.
It's like, why? But no, these model homes are designed to shine. So again, that doesn't mean you can't make your space like that. I'm just saying that they don't come that way, typically.
That is true. And here's the other thing. That's why you will never, ever walk into a model home that doesn't have upgrades.
There you go. Absolutely.
They don't build model homes without upgrades.
No. So
because the base home, you would be highly disappointed. Yeah. Compared to what those model homes look like.
I think it's even down to the cushion on the carpet.
Absolutely. No, it is true.
That sounds really sad.
The pad on the carpet is different.
My goodness. It's when we had the carpet replaced, it was actually comforting to take my shoes off and walk on this nice plush carpet with beautiful new pad. You don't realize how much wear and tear goes into a house that has carpet for 15 or 20 years.
Absolutely.
Right? And those are little things that excite middle-aged people, I think, as let's just say that. I mean, you get to that point, you're like, this is exciting, right?
I mean,
as a kid, I could care less, right? But those are things that are value adds to me, right? And then I see that, and I think a lot of people are the same. So I can't say that my experience is alone. All right, we're going to segue to the last part of this particular podcast today. I want to talk about the doom and gloom.
Mm-hmm.
What are you hearing in the market? What are people's perceptions? And what are things that you are saying to these people about their perceptions? So I'll throw it out. So
okay.
Have you had somebody ask you, Marvin, is the market going to crash?
Oh, all the time. And so everybody or people are kind of all over the board with what they're seeing in the market. And we do have some people that said, oh, I think prices are going to come way down. And it's my first question is, okay, what is the indicator? Where are you getting that information from? Well, I just think it is. Okay. But is there any data that you're looking at that is showing you that that's going to happen? And again, everybody is still focusing back on 2006, 2007, what happened then. And I think that the biggest issue with most people is they have a lack of information, or once again, they're listening to the national news and again, negative news sells, positive news does not on there. So there's that doom and gloom attitude. But there are plenty of people that are realistic about what is going on. We're going to see a lull in the market. And most of the people, especially homeowners, are pretty aware that we cannot sustain what we've seen the last couple of years. It's just completely unsustainable.
And I don't think it's healthy either.
No, it's very unhealthy. In my opinion, I'm kind of happy that things are kind of starting to balance a little more, because we do need a more balanced market. Even though the majority of what I do is list homes for sale, it's still not a healthy market when it's totally 100% a seller's market. It's not healthy when it's totally 100% a buyer's market. There has to be a little bit of give and take, and I do like a more balanced market. But I just try to help people understand that even though rates are higher than where they were at, it may slow things initially, but it will become the new norm, and buyers are still going to buy homes, sellers are still going to sell homes. And the other part of that is I try to explain to them, even though you may think that there's an issue with a lot of homes because our inventory has doubled, well, it doubled off of historically low inventory. So we're not even close to where we should be with normal inventory, even at this point. So the other part of that is that we're still in the worst housing shortage in the history of this country. There are still people that need to find homes that they simply can't find on there. And that is not going to change anytime in the near future, because we still have a serious issue with a lack of building materials. We have a lack of skilled labor. And homes cannot be built anywhere near the rate that they need to be built just to stay even with the demand for housing. So in my opinion, housing is going to get worse from a demand standpoint than before it gets better. We're going to have a much higher demand than we're going to be able to satisfy in the immediate future and in the long-term future.
So we have to couple this with, I call it the elephant in the room, and that is affordability.
Right.
So with inflation numbers going where they were, the increase in cost of living expenses, the average person's income did not increase with it. Right. Not to that mm-hmm. level. Well, now you add insult to injury by increasing your interest rate and your affordability factor goes down. So I did another reel on Instagram that talked about the glass ceiling. And the mm-hmm. glass ceiling is this. You have appreciation, inflation, and cost of living adjustments that have all gone up.
Right.
But your wages have been somewhat flat.
Right.
And with that being the case, there's only a certain point where your affordability is available. And at that point, it's not that you couldn't go higher if you had more income and reduced debt. It's that you can't go any higher because there's a limit.
Correct.
So that is a naturally balancing aspect of the market. It's not that the demand is not there. It's the ability to take apart or take part in the supply that's becoming available.
Correct.
So from a generic standpoint for the listeners and the viewers of this, a heavily sellers-driven market means that you have a lot of buyers coming in and making offers at or above your list price with very little to no concessions. Mm-hmm. And there's such limited inventory that it demands a higher price. It's almost like fighting for the last cookie in the jar.
Right.
Okay. As more supply comes to market, I mean, more homes hit the market, and you see interest rates rise, you may have a smaller pool of people, but those that were the most qualified now have a wonderful opportunity to negotiate themselves into a great opportunity.
That is correct.
But then when you have too much supply, prices have to drop naturally. But here's what my perception is of the market. A balanced market will actually have what we would consider to be 4 to 6 months of supply.
Mm-hmm.
We're hovering just around 3 right now. And we were actually less than 30 days.
Correct.
So with that being the case, we still have a lot of inventory that we need to add to the market to even get to a balanced market.
That is true.
So let's talk about time on market. So national statistics argued that the time on market went up from 10 days to 14 days, now to 16 days.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what are the homes that actually sell within that 10 to 14 days? And let's start business days. I'm not talking about weekends mm-hmm. and stuff, but are those the houses that are priced appropriately?
Yeah, so the ones that are selling, it's still, and we list properties all the time that are still selling in 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
On there, but those prices are, they're very nice properties. They're market ready, is what I consider
sure.
market ready, and they're priced appropriately and they're selling quickly. The ones that are overpriced and that should have had some things done to the property to get them ready for the market are the ones that are sitting longer. And if you look at even here in Bakersfield, traditionally our normal marketing time is between 30 to 60 days.
Yes.
We're still not anywhere near that.
And that was my point in bringing it up. So one of the things that we've also noticed is panic selling. Like people say,
right.
I think I missed the boat. I got to list it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do so without the preparation that you're talking about.
Correct.
They're not realistic with their expectations because they're still wanting to get the biggest piece of the pie without sacrificing what they would need to in
right.
a market like this.
Right. And I think the second part of that too is not having a good view of the big picture,
mm-hmm.
that they don't want to spend a little bit of money here, but then they don't realize, look at how much appreciation I've gained over the last 3 or 4 years.
They forget that part.
Yeah, they forget that part, and they don't want to spend a little bit of money
yeah.
to make that property ready, and which will benefit them even more if they do that, but they're still, instead of looking back at what they've gained, all they can see is what may happen in the future and stuff, and they focus on that. And again, they're just unrealistic on what their expectations are.
So I'm going to throw this back at you. I like to play the devil's advocate. Let's say the market did crash.
Mm-hmm.
We had a 20% correction, and I'll explain what the correction definition is in my mind versus what other people may say. So the first thing is, a market correction doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to lose value. It means that there's going to be a balancing. Or
correct.
We have been seeing this rapid appreciation, which we've seen on average 19 to 21% year over year from 2020 to 2022.
Mm-hmm.
With that peak, we had some areas in Bakersfield go up as much as 45%.
Right.
Right. And you had, on the low end, places going up 35%. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being the case, as you said, they forget about that as being a part of the value that they had in the real estate. But year over year, we are still higher for appreciation than what we were last year. So we've
correct.
Seen what we call a deceleration, which means that instead of a 19% year over year, we're seeing about a 12% year over year, 10% year over year. But here's the thing, it still is positive.
Correct.
Now, a depreciation is going below that, and we're actually going negative. That means that values are going below the threshold of balance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if that did happen? Marvin, will you still sell houses?
Absolutely.
Do you think people will still finance properties?
Absolutely.
And do you think people that thought they missed the boat now have an opportunity will not be foaming at the bit to get themselves into real estate?
In fact, there would probably be more demand.
Exactly.
On there.
So whether it be a good market or a bad market, there will always be people buying and selling real estate.
That is correct.
So is it really a big deal? Yes. You know where the big deal is? You took money out of my pocket because my house went down in value. But guess what? You wouldn't have even been thinking about that if you didn't want to sell or need to sell, mm-hmm. or you didn't borrow against the equity.
Correct.
Because equity is nothing but a number.
That is true. And it realistically is meaningless unless you're refinancing.
Yes.
Or you're selling.
That's
and
what
that
I'm
is it.
About.
But other than that,
that's
equity
the key
means
point,
nothing.
And that's the message I think people are so missing.
Right.
They're so influenced by this thought process. So let's say that we have a 20% decrease in values. Dum, dum, dum. We're still 20% ahead when we were in 2020 at the beginning.
That is true.
Isn't that crazy to think?
It is.
They would have still had 20% appreciation over where 2020 started with in the lockdown over where they are now. If we had a price reduction of 20% and it was an actual depreciation versus a deceleration.
Right. So here's the way people's mindset is. That people think a lot like government when it comes to math with homes. So we appreciated it at 20%. Last year it was right at 20%. Well, this year it's gonna only be 15%. So there was a 5% cut in everything.
Oh
no,
goodness.
It wasn't. We still went up. There was still an increase in that. So I think that that's the mindset that so many people have is, oh, no, the prices are crashing down. No, they're not. They're just adjusting to the current market. And once again, as I commented earlier, they don't look back at what's happened the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years and all the equity that they've gained. All they can focus on is that little bit of a correction that they're seeing in the market. And honestly, like I said, I've not seen a correction in the market. I've seen a correction in the way properties are being listed for sale.
Yes. And I think that's a big point. Like I said, it's the expectations, it's the mistakes that you're talking about.
Right.
And being very clear, this is what the market is doing now. This is what I believe are supportable, documentable, not just my opinion, supportable comps that I believe we should start at.
Right.
But nobody wants to call the baby ugly.
That is true.
Because you always have the cutest kid in the block.
That is right. And all of them are. They're all the nicest home in the neighborhood.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the thing. So, you know, this kind of stuff is, it's just not talked about, Marvin. That's why I wanted to have you on. And I mean, just, I want people to see that we're real people. We care about our environment as far as the real estate space and our community, the families that we're helping. But we also want to be realistic with things.
Right.
Right? Because we just don't know what's going to happen.
That is true.
Right. But we have certain indicators to at least give us some projections. And all we can do is respond. It's those that actually do respond versus just nutting up and doing nothing that will take advantage of things. Because you brought up this in the points of homeownership is a long-term investment sometimes, right? So let's think of it this way. We have a very talented financial advisor in our business networking group, and he pointed out, he said, people that timed the market and pulled money out when the market was dropping and got back in as the market was going up, compared to those that let it ride over time, actually did poorer.
Mm-hmm.
And the that reason is why is because a long-term investment has enough time to compound, even with its dips, historically will still grow,
right?
Real estate is no different. If you have a child that's 7 years old, let's just say, and you're gonna take them through high school, and you have no need to sell right now, but you see this price drop and all of a sudden you sell and you feel like you missed out on something versus having stayed in there until the child hit high school and was out and then sold, there's a stronger chance you'll have gained more equity and sold with more to take with you to the next residence than if you had just sold.
That is true. And again, I don't think that people realize that when you're doing stuff, there's always going to be ups and downs. There's always going to be little corrections here and there. And I gave an example of in one of a presentation that I did of one of my clients that bought a home in 2005 and stayed in that home, went through the crash in the market. That home was worth less than about half of what they paid for it in 2005 when we hit our low in 2009, 2010. But last year they sold that house and they made a ton of money off of what they paid for it in 2005. So the reality is that they bought the house to live in. That was their primary goal for buying the home. And they still, even though we went through that huge crash and it was a historical issue that we went through in the housing market. And will we ever see that again? I don't know, but the odds are it's extremely remote that we will ever see something like that again. And part of the reason is because there are different guidelines in play now that they were not in effect at that time that all that stuff was going on. But in the big picture, they still walked away with a huge check when we closed escrow on that house. That's just the reality of what happens over time. And where would they have been had they got scared and walked away from that house because it was worth half of what they had paid for it?
Strong chance they'd probably be renting.
Yeah.
Right.
And they would have had nothing.
Correct.
When they sold that property and were able to move. And that was part of their retirement and everything else. They were still able to cash out a huge check at the end of that for the equity that they had in that particular property on there. So again, part of it is just big picture things. Are things going to change? Absolutely. Sometimes there'll be changes for the good. Sometimes there'll be not so good changes. But everything goes through cycles. And in the big picture, when you look at long-term benefits, you cannot argue with the benefits of owning a home. And here's the other part that people fail to realize. When it comes to owning a home, it is a long-term forced savings account. You're not doing different than you would be if you were renting someplace because you're still writing a check every single month for that rent. The difference is that I have yet to see a landlord that gives a tenant a huge check when they move out. It just doesn't happen. When you sell your home and you move to the next, you're going to get a sizable check to use that equity for that next home.
I'm going to give you the corollary to that.
What's that?
You're able to live with family, and you drove them so crazy over the last 5 years from living there for free, they're paying to help you to buy a house because they're helping you with the down
payment. That is true. Yeah,
that's the one exception, Marvin.
Yeah, that is true.
You had somebody kind enough to say, I love you enough to get rid of you. And you've been freeloading too long, yep. And you've been spending all your money, and now you still need help. I want you to get out, so I'm going to help you with the down payment.
Right.
So, yeah. Anyways, hey, great speaking with you, Marvin. Appreciate your time, and we'll have to do it again.
Yep, my pleasure.